Shalom Aleichem, Rabbeisai. I'm going to begin with two anecdotes as we lead up to Shvi Shal Pesach. Begin with two anecdotes. When Reb Shlomo Volba, his yahrzeit was yesterday, when Reb Shlomo Volba first came to the Mir Yeshiva wanting to get in, he was interviewed by the Mashkiach, Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz. And Rabbi Yeruchim Levavitz asked him in the interview, he said to him, "Do you believe in Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea?" And Shlomo Volba was a bit surprised by the question. He said, "Yeah." So Rabbi Yeruchim said to him, "What, you believe that it literally, that like the sea physically split?" And Shlomo Volba, still a bit confused, said, "Yeah." So he said, "What, like the sea simply went in two directions and it was like dry land in the middle? It was like all literal?" And again, Reb Shlomo Volba, still a bit confused, he said, "Yeah." So Rabbi Yeruchim said, "Okay, then we can accept you into the yeshiva." Rabbi Yeruchim in general was a little bit suspicious of Reb Shlomo Volba, was from Germany. He was a bit suspicious of the more sophisticated German Jews who may have had a more sophisticated way of approaching it, a more rationalized way of approaching it, rather than this is exactly what happened. But this is something that Reb Shlomo Volba used to relate. Now, along similar lines, Reb Chatzkel Levenstein, the famous Mashgiach, actually originally from here, but ultimately in Panovich, he was one time on Shvi Shel Pesach. He was seen going up to the Ezra Snoshim of the yeshiva. This was at night. There weren't really people in the yeshiva. And he moved the benches aside. He kind of like made like a pile of benches and shtenders on one side, and a pile of benches and shtenders on the other side. And he cleared a path in between, and he began walking through. What he was trying to do was, he was trying to simulate the experience of Kriyas Yamsuf, trying to make it alive for himself, trying to make it real. This was his style of Avoida. Rabbi Chatzkel Levenstein was known for his Avoida in Emuna. He had many exercises to try to make his Emuna as tangible as possible. It's interesting to note in parentheses that the Chazon Ish said about three of the Musar giants of that time. There was Rav Dessler, the Michtav Melio, and there was Rabbi Eli Lapian, and there was Rabbi Chatzkel Levenstein. So the Chazon Ish had his categorization for each of them. He said that Rav Dessler, his emuna lies in his immense intellect, in his great mind. Anybody who learned the depths of Michtav Meliyahu can relate to that. So Rabbi Eli Lapian, his emuna lies in the very fine sensitivities of his heart. And Rabbi Chatzkel Levenstein, his emuna, he holds it in his hands. He holds it in his hands. Meaning to say, this is something he was always trying to make tangible, emuna chushis, what we call sensory emuna, to make it alive, real, physical. When we talk about Kriyas Yamsuf, when we talk about Kriyas Yamsuf as the culmination of the process of the Ten Makas, Kriyas Yamsuf was the greatest spectacle ever seen by man in history up until that point. It was Hashem led it from the Makas, culminating in Makas Becheiris. What he was basically taking the Jewish people doing was taking the Jewish people and leading them from one height to another in rapid succession, from Becheiris to Kriyas Yamsuf, each of which were unprecedented experiences. Becheiris was the greatest thing that ever Makas Becheiris was the greatest thing that was ever witnessed up until that point. Then that was topped by Kriyas Yamsuf, and that relatively shortly afterwards was topped by the greatest experience ever experienced by man of Matan Torah. But at Kriyas Yamsuf, the Jews experienced one of the most awesome experiences possible. And as we've discussed with regard to much of Yetzias Mitzrayim, this experience is meant to be one of the premises, one of the foundations of our emuna and of our dynamics with Hashem. And therefore, it's important for us to really try to envision it, to try to picture what it really looked like. Really the same Avodah as with all of the Ten Makas. But to picture both, to really appreciate the dynamics of what were going on then, the energy, and to just appreciate the sight. Being at the sea is an awesome sight. You look out at the vast sea, and you could just stand there mesmerized for a long time, just watching the sea and its vastness. And then if you really, in your mind's eye, close your eyes and really try to picture the scene, to try to picture the scene of in the middle of the sea, suddenly the water starts parting. And again, I'm saying the words we already know. But the Chokhmah here is to really try to see it in the mind's eye, to see how the water starts parting and starts moving apart, and there begins to be a certain split in the sea, and it gets deeper and deeper, and there's a major wave going up in either on either side in each direction, kind of like a tidal wave, but moving away from the center of the sea. And just the whole thing opens up. If you really try to picture it in your mind's eye, the sight is awesome. And it is a sight that Hashem wants us to be seeing. But then it goes more than that. It goes more than that. If you picture the scene, you're going to get back to the dynamics of what was going on at the time. We talked about, back with the Eser Makas, how Hashem was playing cat and mouse with the Mitzrim. And here what Hashem does is, he takes the game, so to speak, to a certain climax. How he takes the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, making a mockery out of Paroi, because Moshe had told Paroi that we're going out for 3 days, and then we're going to be back. People are bothered by the question, why did this have to happen through trickery? Why did this have to happen through trickery? Hashem was beating up Mitzrayim in the worst possible way. Hashem couldn't just say, I'm taking them out and that's it. So if you put together something about Avigdor Milos and Chassam Sofer, a very profound picture emerges. First of all, Avigdor Milos says that there was no trickery going on. Paroi knew exactly what was happening, and it was really all part of the bloated pride. It was like Moshe was mocking him by saying, we'll be back. That's why Paroi was so resisting it. First he said, well, leave the kids, kind of like telling Moshe, put your money where your mouth is. And Moshe says, no, which was really a tease. Oh, we'll be back, but we need to take the kids with us. And then Paroi says, okay, I'll leave the livestock, trying to get Moshe to concede that he's really serious, he's really going to be back. Moshe is basically telling him, we don't plan on coming back. No, we have to take the livestock also. This is all part of the mockery that Hashem was making of Paroi. But why did he do it this way? Chassam Sofer says that this was all part of the Midah Keneged Midah. The Jewish people had been tricked into slavery in the first place. They were told they were going to be paid handsomely. They were told that it's going to put them into a very high, prestigious position in Egyptian society. And Paroi basically tricked them, duped them into slavery. Part of the Midah Keneged Midah was that bitter feeling of having been taken advantage of. That was all part of what Hashem was trying to deal back to Paroi. That's what the Chassam Sofer says. That yes, not just should the Jewish people were torn by force away from him, and he was beaten to the ground, but on top of that, he should also swallow the sour taste of trickery, of being taken advantage of, all as part of the Midah Keneged Midah. So what does Hashem do? Hashem takes the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and then he starts baiting Paroi. The games aren't finished yet. Hashem isn't finished playing with Paroi yet. He starts baiting Paroi. What does he have the Jewish people do? He has them start circling. Hashem is very deliberately guiding them in a confused path. He has them start circling. The purpose being what? It's mamish dangling the worm in front of the fish. Mamish dangling the worm in front of the fish. Hashem is baiting, kind of like dangling the Jewish people in front of Paroi and saying, come get them, come get them. And Paroi takes the bait, and he comes charging out. And then Hashem has the Jewish people waiting at the sea. And then, Taka, comes the spectacle that we've been describing. How you hear the wind is blowing throughout the entire night. The wind is getting stronger and stronger until it culminates with the sea, with a roar moving in both directions, parting in the middle. The Jewish people walk through. The Jewish people walk through. The entire Egyptian army comes charging after them, and this is exactly Hashem simply baiting them. He moves the Jewish people through, lets the Egyptians come in, and then the culmination of all the ten Makkos come to their peak, where Hashem takes the entire Egyptian army and flings them into the sea. This is also something to really try to picture in the mind's eye, to try to picture in the mind's eye what it looks like. Sus v'roich v'roma v'yom. If you've seen horses, horses are big beasts, and you picture a horse and a big warrior sitting on top of him, and you're picturing hundreds of them. And it's a sight to behold. It's an impressive sight. Such an army of horses and footmen and chariots led by the 600 chariots. And then to picture them all being thrust up into the air, flying through the air, into the water, back up, mamish like a popcorn machine. If you picture a popcorn machine with the popcorn flying up and down, just picture horses and warriors and chariots. This is the culmination of the process of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And this is Hashem once again showing us who He is, and who we are to Him. And the way David HaMelech describes this is we're following Hashem out into the desert. We discussed this yesterday a bit. We're following Hashem into the desert, and we're simply seeing how all of nature goes scattering before Hashem, right? David HaMelech describes it, Hayom rov ayonos hayadin yisoiv l'ochor. Hashem is leading His people out, and we're proudly following along behind. All of nature scatters. This is the Hashem that we're following. And that force that isn't scared of Him, Hashem simply takes them and mamish, like we said before, a popcorn machine, thrusts them all into the sea. This is the scene that Hashem wants us to be picturing. Now, when you're picturing in your mind's eye this spectacle, this scene of the sea actually splitting, I'm going to say a chiddush now. Not a chiddush at all. Something so simple, but it's a bit of a chiddush in terms of applying it. The vart here is, what we're meant to be doing is to understand that this is not the Hashem of then, but this is the Hashem that we are busy dealing with on a daily basis. When you try in your mind's eye to picture the awesome scene of a sea splitting, and the awesome scene of an entire mighty army simply being flung up and down helplessly, and you realize that this is the Hashem that you davened mincha to this afternoon. This is the Hashem that you're interacting with today. It's the same Hashem as then. Any chiddush there, no chiddush there, it's obvious. But it's an avodah to focus on it and to sense it and to live with it. That the Hashem that I'm talking to today, that Hashem that I'm asking for refuah, that Hashem that I'm asking for parnasa from, is the same Hashem that split the sea in that very, very spectacular fashion. And really, if you think about it, you'll understand so much profundity to the halacha, the famous halacha that of smichas geula l'tfila. The Gemara tells us, and this is paskin in the halacha, and this is how the tefillah is structured, that Shemoneh Esrei should immediately follow the bracha of the geula. When we talk about Kriyas Yamsuf, Shemoneh Esrei should be immediately preceded by the bracha about the splitting of the sea. What's the idea here? The idea here is exactly what we've been discussing. Before you stand up to daven to Hashem, have a sense of who it is you're davening to. Have a sense of the force that you're talking to, of the magnitude of who it is that you're speaking to. Before you begin Shemoneh Esrei, you're about to make a few requests. You're about to ask for a refuah. You're about to ask for an improvement in your panasa. You're about to ask for harmony in your home. These are not simple things. Will they happen? Can they happen? And you have to picture that scene. The one you're about to ask for is the one who tore the sea apart in that spectacular way. Chazal want you to move into your Shemini Esrei, to move into your Bakashas with that picture, with that image in your mind of that this is the one you're dealing with. This is who you're dealing with. That same Hashem. That's the Chochmah here. And in this sense, there's actually something of a paradox that we're meant to be dealing with. Because as we say, Hashem Ishmil Chama, Hashem Shemoi, Hashem showed himself to us at that point as a mighty man of war, so to speak. A mighty man of war, kiviyachol. And at the same time, he was treating us with softness, with love, kiviyachol, pampering us, cushioning us. Where on the one hand, seeing Hashem acting like a mighty, angry warrior, or we might say an angry father who is responding to a whole group of bullies who are picking on his one helpless child with the full wrath and the full anger, while at the same time toward us, he's acting kiviyachol as a mother. He takes us and, we mentioned yesterday, moves us through the dry land, moves us through the split sea, not in the natural state. There is no natural state of a split sea, but if there is a natural state of a split sea, the natural state of a split sea is a muddy mess. You'd be walking through mud, but no, that's not how Hashem set it up. He moved us through on dry land. He moved us through with love. He moved us through with care. He wanted us to move through comfortably. And while we see his might, we're at the same time experiencing his love and his care. Now, when we talk about this, we have to remember that we're talking about this on the one hand on a national level. This is what he did for the Jewish people. But on the other hand, we have to keep bringing to mind the personal aspect of this. We already mentioned back when we first started talking about the Makas and Yetzias Mitzrayim, what the Maharal says, that that every person has to view himself as though he went out of Mitzrayim. When Chazal say Chayiv Adam Liris is Atzmai, a person is Chayiv this, Chayiv to view it this way, Chayiv to view it that way, they're imposing a chiyuv on us. They're telling us that there's a real requirement to see it this way, which means that it's true. You're not required to see something a certain way if it isn't true. The Maharal says that when Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, the whole process of the 10 Makas of Yetzias Mitzrayim was not just done for the nation as a whole, but Hashem was targeting each individual. When Hashem went through the whole process of Dan Tzfadea, Kinim Arayv, culminating with Makas Bechayis, Hashem was picturing each individual, not just each individual at that time, but the Maharal says, every individual soul of Klal Yisrael, Hashem was picturing and saying, I'm doing this process for him. He alone would justify this whole process. This really ties into what Chazal say, Echayev Adam Loimar Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam. That a person is obligated to say, the world was created for me. What that really means is that each neshama of a Jew is an end unto itself. And yes, the whole universe would be justified for that one Jew. Hashem, his plan is that each Jew's program, all the different Jews' programs should be intertwined. But it's not that, okay, you know, a million Jews justifies the universe. No, that's not the pshat. The pshat is that really the individual Jew is the end purpose of Hashem's plan and would justify an entire universe. And when Hashem carried out the Ten Makas, when Hashem split the sea, it was all with the purpose of this is all being done for that one specific Jew, for him to see who I am, for him to get to know me. And that justifies the whole process. This is what I want. And who is that specific? Well, culminating with the very great announcement at Har Sinai itself of Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, which is expressed in the singular. This is all a process leading up to, I did all this because I want a personal connection with you specifically. Now, the paradox that we mentioned is very important. The paradox that we mentioned of Hashem on the one hand acting with wrath, acting with might, while on the other hand acting with care, was something that wasn't just the paradox between the way he related to the Mitzrayim at the same time that he related to us otherwise. But even in the way Hashem related to the Jewish people throughout the whole period in the desert, it was very much characterized by this. There was harsh treatment in the desert, and this is famous. But people lose sight of the fact of the closeness that characterized the whole period in the desert. The Kuzari makes the point that people, you know, you hear this and say, oh, wow, that's interesting. We hear about how angry Hashem was around the time of the Egel, the different Averis that we're told happened in the Midbar. But at the same time, the Kuzari says, and we know that there were different implications and there were punishments. At the same time, the Kuzari says, no, the man never stopped flowing. The man never stopped flowing. Now we have to appreciate that the man was not just a technicality to keep them alive. The man was a very, very great sign of favor and closeness. We say in Dayenu, that had Hashem not provided our needs in the Midbar, Dayenu. Why? We had a lot of money with us, and there were nations nearby, and we could have dealt with them. Okay, fine. Then we go on and we say, had Hashem provided our needs in the Midbar, but he hadn't fed us the man Dayenu, meaning Hashem could have provided our needs through natural means. Hashem could have made things grow, this, that. No, Hashem wanted to feed us the man. Hashem wanted to be, kiviyachol, spoon-feeding us in a way that is outside the realm of the natural world. Outside the realm of the natural world. This is what Hashem wanted to be. This is the way Hashem wanted to be relating to us in the Midbar. And that was the dynamic in the Midbar. The dynamic in the Midbar was a period of closeness that was never again experienced in history. But it went along with harsh treatment at the same time. Because Hashem was being mechanech Klal Yisrael. Hashem wanted to bring Klal Yisrael to certain places. And you know what? Hashem operated with very old-fashioned chinuch, which was more suited for generations before us, but even more suited for the very early generations of old. Harsh chinuch meant to produce absolute excellence. And this was what the Midbar produced. It drove the Jewish people to higher and higher standards, and they were huffing and puffing to keep up with it, and any slip brought harsh punishment, but it drove them to higher standards. That's a discussion that deserves greater length. But while all this was going on, those expressions of closeness were there, the man was there, and the people were able to handle the harsh treatment because they knew of Hashem's love for them. It was a given. It's like a maisa that Rabbi Eli Lapian, there was a Talmud who, Rabbi Eli Lapian used to sit at the doorway to, in his yeshiva, used to sit at the doorway to the Bais Medrash in order to see when the Bachrim, when the Talmidim came into Shachris. Who came in earlier, who came in later. Now, there was one Bachur who woke up late. He wanted to get to his place without being caught by the Mashkiach, without being caught by Rabbi Eli Lapian. So his seat was toward the front of the Bais Medrash right near the window. So he simply dropped in through the window. Slipped in through the window and dropped straight into his seat. He never passed Rabbi Eli Lapian. Now when the Bachrim filed out, Rabbi Eli Lapian realized that he had not seen this Bachur come in. So he said to him, when did you come in? So the boy said at Ashrei. Now, what he meant was Ashrei Vuv Letzion. But he didn't say that. He just said of Ashrei. Rav Eli Lapian immediately understood what happened. And he said, coming late is one thing. Sneaking in is one thing. But now you were actually dishonest with me. He said, and then he said the following words. He said, if I were confident in the fact that you knew how much I love you, I would punish you severely. But since I don't know if you know that I love you, I'm not going to punish you. I can't punish you. That was what he told him. The Jewish people grew from Hashem's harsh treatment. The Jewish people grew from Hashem's harsh treatment. Why? Because the love was firmly in place. It's less emphasized when we talk about the Dor HaMidbar. It's less emphasized. But it was an inherent, fundamental part of the experience of living in those times, of living in that period. And I know each of the individual cases has to be addressed in its own. This is a big area of study. We're not getting into it all now. But all of the different harsh experiences and all of the castigation and the blame and the accusations and the harsh punishments, which often included death, came against a backdrop of clear, open love. You have to remember that for the Jewish people, death is not the end of the game. And sometimes death can be a means of, first of all, getting a person to even greater places in the next world, and also for furthering Hashem's program with the Jewish people in this world. And for the people living in the reality of those days, death was almost like, it was a certain transition, and they all understood it, and they all knew where it was going. And, well, literally and figuratively, it was not the end of the world. It was significant. It certainly was. But it was not the end of the world. And they were able to keep with Hashem's program and grow with Hashem's program because with all of the very harsh treatment that was there, it was against a very clear background. They knew exactly where they stood with him. They knew that they were with him on a completely different plane. They understood the process that he was putting them through. Obviously, this connects to what we're going through now. The experiences then, the Ramban tells us in the very, very fundamental Ramban at the end of Parshas Boy, is that the very great Nisim that happened to the Jewish people then were meant to get them into the mentality of seeing Hashem operating in the world. And the Ramban says that mitoich hanisim hagdoilim, from the open nisim, a person is meant to see the nisim hanistarim. What that means is that there isn't, as far as the Jewish people are concerned, there isn't something called teva. There isn't the world running on its own. Hashem uses a medium of derech hateva to implement his plans and to carry out his very specific plan for the Jewish people as a whole and for each individual. Hashem weaves his conduct of all of us as a whole and of each of us as an individual. Hashem weaves his conduct into Derech HaTeva, but thinking back to the experiences, reliving, re-envisioning the experiences of Kriyas Yam Suf in the way that we described earlier, a person is meant to see that same Hashem operating in his private life and operating with the Jewish people in general. There has to be a certain background in learning to have seen Hashem's love beforehand. I think that this is something that is not new to this kehila. This is definitely a very, very big effect of learning Chovos Halavos, which Malinowitz Zatzal very much implanted in the kehila's consciousness. If we are capable of going through this period now while not losing sight of the love that Hashem shows us in our lives, while being able to, on the one hand, it's a tzara, there's pain, there's loss, there's fear, while at the same time moving through it with the ability to see Hashem's love still surrounding us, still enveloping us, You can feel it. This might sound poetic, but this is really true. You feel it by stepping out and looking up at the sun shining down. You're seeing Hashem smile at you. You feel it in the functioning of your body, understanding that Hashem is busy tending to your properly functioning body while all this is going on. You sense it in your Yom Tov food, which, as we've discussed, using the Kuzari's words, you are experiencing being a guest at Hashem's table and being served a Yom Tov Suda by Him. And in general, the whole concept of the Moed is Lihiva Eid, to be getting together with Hashem. If we can be experiencing whatever Hashem is doing against the backdrop of what Hashem is doing, meaning not just to see only the ordeals, the tribulations that Hashem is putting us through now, but to be able at the same time to see that Hashem is doing more than that also. While Hashem is busy doing this, He's busy doing other things also. Like the Kuzari said, while Hashem was busy punishing them from the eagle, the man was continuing to come down. The bracha in our lives is still there. In whatever way each of us is experiencing the tzar of what's going on now, how much bracha is still there? The question is, are these things just taken by us as nature? Or are we experiencing, have we already put effort into experiencing beforehand, and can we bring it out in ourselves, from ourselves now, to also experience all the bracha surrounding us in our lives as kisses from Hashem, as smiles from Hashem, as reassuring embraces, saying that, yes, I know what's going on, but this is me, it's the same me, I haven't changed, my approach to you hasn't changed, and I'm doing what I need to be doing while at the same time continuing to care for you and to carry you through it. Bezus Hashem, we should be zeichet to get through it right, to see it right, to see the Yeshua, to rejoice in the Yeshua of Hashem, Bezus Hashem. And it just occurred to me as I was saying Hallel these days, and this is perhaps something you may want to take home. We still have another 2 days of Hallel. We're saying Ana Hashem Hashiana. We say Ana Hashem Hashiana. The application is so obvious, so clear. We're asking Hashem for salvation. We don't need to explain anything. But then when we add Ana Hashem Atzlichana, what we're asking, Hashem save us, and Hashem grant us success. Hashem grant us success in getting through this right, in getting through it in the right way, and being able to move through it in the way that you want us to, and to be able to get out of it and to become from it everything that you want. As is Hashem, we should be zeichet to the way Moshe Rabbeinu said in Kriyas Yamsuf, Hisyatzvu Uru'us Yeshuas Hashem. Stand forth, face what's coming, and see the Yeshuas Hashem with your own eyes. Shvi Agutn Yom Tiv Be'ezos Hashem. We'll stop the recording now and then unmute.